Hello and welcome. My name is Amanda Carlisle and this AAT podcast is titled Leadership for Accountants. We're going to look at three areas, and the three areas are: what does good leadership look like? Number two, the five stages in a leadership process. And number three is team meetings. So before we start, if you are managing people, if you are leading teams at the moment, and I went into your organisation and asked them, how good are you at leading and why should other people be led by you, what would they say? And it would be quite interesting to evaluate how your teams at the moment would evaluate your style of leadership. So let's just do this for a couple of minutes. This is just the real first challenge. Between 1 to 10, how good are you at leading other people towards a specific outcome or goal? 1 out of 10. 1 out of 10 is you couldn't be any worse. And 10 is you could not be any better at leading other people. Let's just pause for thought. Where are you on that Richter scale between 1 to 10 and why? So thank you for undertaking that challenge. And as we move through this podcast, I'd like you to be pulling out those tools and tips or thoughts to think about to enable you to improve that score out of 10. So now that we've done that, let's just review what successful leadership looks like. So let's have a look at the differences between what a manager is and what a leader is. A manager is very much one that carries out a series of activities. And we think of it as a cycle. Number one is that a good manager will set objectives and then produce a plan of how those objectives will be realised. A good manager is one that really clearly communicates with the team so they understand what their role is in the plan and how to realise the key goals and objectives. A successful manager will put in systems to monitor and measure the performance of a team or a group of individuals and then exert control. Finally, reviewing and putting together lessons learned to then drive the next cycle of goal setting and action planning. So that's really what a good manager does. How is this different from a really successful leader? Well, a leader is one that takes uncertainty and a lack of clarity and provides a vision that is clearly understood, that gives people a sense of what it will be to be successful, which a person that can clearly communicate what that vision means as far as success, creates purpose and values and goals, is able to diagnose and be flexible with different situations and different contexts. A leader is one who can motivate and inspire, and also one that is good at developing other people and effectively, I know you're going to find this a little bit strange, one that empowers other people to the point that in effect, teams and individuals become self-managed and the leader puts themselves out of a job. It sounds crazy, I know, but a leader is one that enables teams and individuals to fulfill their potential and deliver the vision. So you might be sat there thinking, well, that's great, Amanda, but how do I do it? So let's have a look at step number two. We're going to look at the five stages in a leadership process. And these five key steps, we're going to follow the thoughts of Ken Blanchard, who looked at situational leadership. Through the research that he undertook, the real summary, the real conclusion from his research is that every situation is different and every context and every team goes through different stages of development where different leadership styles are needed for different situations, hence the term situational leadership. Ken Blanchard talked about five key stages, and these are the five key stages. He said, number one, you need to determine the purpose, the values and goals of the team. What is the team there to do. Number two is to diagnose where the team is in its current stage or development. Number three is to match the appropriate leadership style to what's been diagnosed and what are the goals and objectives of that team. Stage number four is to apply it. Stage number five is to grow team empowerment so the team becomes self-sustaining. And these are the five stages that we're going to move through and really get to grips with what happens practically in each one of these stages. So stage number one, purpose, values and goals. And the very best organisations have the very best teams. And they have six key characteristics that are in common. This relates back to research undertaken by Kazenbach and Smith, two Harvard and McKinsey researchers. They looked at 80 organisations in the US, from multinationals to SMEs. They did not look at sports teams, but they looked at high-performing teams in these 80 organisations and what made them significantly different. So in this stage one, the things that are common are having common goals, common purpose, common core values, a common approach, complementary skills, and the sixth key characteristic is that the teams were typically small, between 6 to 10 in the number of people that sat within the teams. And what I'd like to do in this first stage is just focus on a few of these characteristics. Number one, the team's purpose. This provides the reason for the team's existence. It is specific and it's clearly understood and it's perceived to be important and meaningful. Important and meaningful. I see and hear about a lot of team purposes that are banded around the office. However, it's something that seems to happen every now and again at a team event and then it's forgotten about. The team purpose is important and meaningful. So, for example, if you are running a team of accountants, you might say that the team's purpose is to provide the best, to be the best provider of financial and commercial information to support our internal and external customers. So the team purpose has to be short and memorable. Another example, an accredited member of the team providing support to management through the provision of valuable information that contributes towards the important decisions. So once the team purpose has been established and agreed, everything else that happens should be connected and aligned back to that team purpose. Second characteristic I'd like to look at is the values of the teams. And I'm not talking about corporate values. I'm not talking about mission statements. I'm talking about when you ask people what really matters to them, what's really important in what happens on a day-to-day basis. This is what the values are. Values are a guide to what people do. They influence our every action and interaction, and they make everything support the values in practice. So as a really effective leader, to spend the time creating them, defining them, and what this would mean to the people in the team will eventually make your life so much easier as a leader of teams. Third characteristic is to establish common goals. I often find in finance functions that we're pretty good as accountants at defining individual goals, and team goals are often missing, or that connection, that coherent alignment between what individuals are performing and how they're delivering and how that connects to the biggest picture. Now, what we need as really effective leaders in this stage is to make sure that we've got cohesion and we can see and measure in a coherent way how individuals' roles and responsibilities feed into individual goals and how the individual goals feed into and contribute towards the finance team goals and how those finance team goals are clearly aligned and contribute towards the business and commercial goals of the organisation. Because in leadership, we're wanting to enable people to see and to measure how they make a difference to the bigger picture. And shared team goals are one of the key things that successful leaders do. Also, understanding what your role and responsibility is and having clarity and enabling other people to have clarity of what is expected from them is key. And we have a nice little anecdote here. We've called it Everybody, Somebody, Anybody and Nobody, which describes the consequences of not having upfront at the start of a team clear roles and responsibilities. Here we go. There was an important job to be done, and everybody was sure that somebody would do it. Anybody could have done it, but nobody did it. Somebody got angry about that because it was everybody's job, and everybody thought that anybody could do it, but nobody realised that everybody wouldn't do it. It ended up that everybody blamed somebody when nobody did what anybody could have done. And I think you will have heard the key message in there of the chaos that can pursue when roles and responsibilities are not clear. Okay, so step one in setting up that team with common purpose, values and goals and a sense of understanding what the roles and responsibilities are fundamental to leading a team. Let's move on to stage two, because stage two is about diagnosing, spending a little bit of time to understand how that team are operating at the moment. And I ask you the question, would it be useful for you to understand your own preferences of how you fit into a team and how this might be different from other team members? Would it be useful as a leader to understand the team's behavioural preferences? And how would this information help you to be a better leader? So these two examples I'm going to give of methodologies or approaches that you can use in a very simple and easy way to understand them, to bring self-awareness of where the team is. The first one you may have heard of is Belbin. Meredith Belbin took 9 years studying the behaviour of leaders from all over the world. She looked at their different core personality traits, intellectual styles and behaviours, and was able to assess them during this exercise. From the work that Belbin undertook, she identified 9 key team roles that make up high-performing teams. And this exercise is not about pigeonholing people. This is about providing insight into the tendency to behave and contribute and interrelate with others in a particular way. So Belbin devised a way of analysing teams through a series of questions. And I'm sure if you go onto Google, you can find out what the Belbin exercise is. In summary, the outcome is that Belbin identified that there are action-orientated roles in highly successful teams, people-orientated roles and cerebral roles. The 9 different roles that she identified were shapers, implementers and completer finishers, coordinators, team workers and resource investigators, plants, monitor evaluators and technical specialists. And I think if you understand the differences between these roles, it helps you to bring an awareness on how you are different from the other team members and also the ability for the team itself to identify what its key strengths are, what the gaps may be. So, for example, in finance teams, there is a tendency to have lots of monitor evaluators and coordinators, i.e. people that have a preference and a tendency to be able to evaluate quantitative information and to come up with rationale and logical argument and to be able to coordinate resources in a systematic and chronological way. What usually is in low abundance in finance teams is the ability to think outside the box, generate new and interesting approaches and to work creativity and to problem solve in a new and different way. So through going through the Belvins exercise, it enables a leader to really enable the team to understand what it needs to be aware of to improve its performance. The second diagnosis tool I'd like to talk about is Tuchman. And Tuchman, rather than looking at the roles, he looked and identified the stages that a team will go through. He called these the forming, storming, norming, and performing stages. So as we're going through these four stages, you might be thinking about your own team and where they would fit in this process of evolution. The forming stage is obviously when a team is first set up. It's where people are generally polite. It's known as the honeymoon period. People are quite watchful and guarded. There's quite a bit of anxiety as people are trying to work out how they fit into this team and what their contribution is going to be. And in this forming stage, there's a high degree of dependence on the leader to provide clarity and structure on why the team exists in the first place. Stage number two is often known as storming, as people are trying to establish where they fit in. It's usually noisy and quite rebellious. There's quite a lot of conflict and heated negotiation as people are trying to establish their role within the team. One of the risks within this second stage are subgroupings and cliques are established as people are trying to find where they fit into the social fabric of this new team. When everything has settled down, then we've got stage number three. It's about norming. It's about getting organised. Clearer roles emerge. People develop their skills to be able to deliver results. It's about establishing procedures and norms, giving feedback, confronting issues, and definitely a more open exchange of ideas. And the people within those teams have a better understanding of one another and are more likely to listen. And then finally, the fourth stage, performing. It's where every leader would like to get their team. Very much a team excitement. There's a high degree of collaboration and interdependency. There's a real sense of a team spirit and team strength. There's a lot of sharing of leadership and resources and a high degree of confidence that the team will deliver positive and a successful outcome. Now, the most important function of a leader is to help the group move through the stages in development to facilitate this process. And this moves us nicely on to stage number three, because as a leader, being able to identify the roles, the strengths and weaknesses within a team and where it is in its stages of formation will help the leader to be more effective. And Ken Blanchard, in his work on situational leadership, recognised this. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to take Tuchman and talk through the type of leadership style that needs to be matched and applied in these situations to deliver the best result. So in the forming stage, stage number one, the team generally needs a high degree of direction and a low degree of support. Why? Because there's usually a high degree of commitment as everybody is in their honeymoon stage. However, people are unsure of what's expected and why the team exists. So the style of leadership is very much a controlling style, an organising style. The leader defines the rules and makes the decisions. If there's an overemphasis on this, the risk is that a dependency culture is adopted as people don't want to make decisions unless the leader has made it for them. If there's an underemphasis, one of the risks is that inexperienced team members can lose confidence and become demotivated as they don't know specifically what the team is expected to do and how they fit into it. So it feels like the first day of work, perhaps when you were shown where the canteen is and where your desk is and where the stationery cupboard was, there's a high degree of organisation and controlling as people tell you what to do, and you need that information to get started. Okay, stage number two is about the storming. And the storming, as you remember, there's a high degree of conflict as people trying to position themselves to get the best outcome. According to Ken Blanchard, the most productive leadership style here is one of a coaching style. The leader defines the roles and tasks, but seeks ideas and suggestions from the team. An overemphasis of this coaching style, maybe it feels a little bit patronising or a little bit stifling, and the team members can lose interest. And an underemphasis means that the inexperienced team become demotivated as ideas are not sought or used. So a coaching style, which is very much about using the questions and helping the team to realise that they have the capability and the skill to deliver. Step number three on Tuckman's was around norming as the team really settle down and it becomes one of performing. Here, the leadership style is a supportive style. The leader passes the day-to-day decisions to the team, facilitates, as doesn't need to give much direction. The team knows what it's there to do. Everybody has clarity of what's expected. So this is a nice opportunity for the leader to step back, obviously keeping in control of the results, but enabling competent people to make decisions. An overemphasis here is that this is difficult with inexperienced staff, so the assumption is that they have got a degree of experience here. Underemphasis is that they feel abandoned with no clear direction. So it's good here to keep on checking and testing that everybody understands what the end game is and the vision. And then finally, we've got high-performing teams that work well together. They are self-sustaining. And Ken Blanchard here said it's an empowering style. The leader is involved with decisions but leaves the control with the team. The team are able to work with little support and supervision. Overemphasis of this style, the risk is you get a directionless team and perhaps you need to go back to clarifying and giving direction. An underemphasis, if the team are highly committed and highly confident, it's that it can stifle experienced team members who become disillusioned. So just to recap, stages three and four were about matching the leadership style and applying it. And the key challenge for really good leadership for accountants is to be flexible. You have to be great at showing that you can demonstrate leadership style that fits in every stage of Tuckman, from forming to storming to norming and performing. It is not down to the team to make changes. It's to you as a leader to show change leadership, to show that you can be flexible and pragmatic and to get the best results from different situations. Stage number five is called empowerment, where effectively the leader can really step out of the situation because the team is self-sustaining. And I think one of the best examples of when this is the case is when the team meeting will go ahead and be perceived as meaningful and important when the team manager or team leader is not there. It will take place anyway. And that is a really good example to look out for, of a team that is highly motivated and is being well led. Okay, part three of this podcast, I just want to touch on team meetings. Because as I talk to finance professionals and they talk around the issues of leadership, I ask, and I'm going to ask you the same question, how often do you lead a team meeting? How often do the team get together to discuss team issues? Now, if you're going to respond to that question saying, well, my team never get together, then I would ask you, how can you show clear leadership if the group that report into you never meet together as a team? And how can you deliver great team results and lead that team to success if the team meeting is seen as an opportunity to go through issues from the previous team meeting, to go around the houses and where everybody gives an update on what they've done? And everybody, as you know, talks too much because they want to demonstrate what they've been doing. And it's seen as a group of people, all individually working, who are just talking about their individual goals and objectives. Some people refer to these team meetings as places where you take minutes and waste hours, or it never happens. And in finance, it's really easy for this to happen because of the technical nature, which allows us, or perhaps even encourages us, to work in silos. A really good leader will provide common glue and a sense of team identity. And this can only happen from a leader who is really good at facilitating team meetings. So to look at the criteria that makes a really effective team meeting, if I asked you this question, you'd probably list the things out, such as: a good leader will make sure it happens. They provide clarity of purpose. The team meeting will contribute towards team goals. There's always an agenda. The meeting's always timed, and a good leader will chair it. And if you were to list all those things, I'd say, yes, you are absolutely right. Good team leadership is about doing all these things and more. Because leadership is about the process, i.e. what's happening within that team discussion. A good leader is there to facilitate. A good leader is there to ensure that the communication is there, i.e. people want to listen, that they participate, that they take ownership for the success of the meeting. That the team meeting is not just about giving an update or sharing information, that it's about making team decisions together. A team meeting is run really effectively if it's seen as an opportunity to resolve conflict and also to be competitive and to challenge one another. And a team meeting is led really successfully if there's opportunity to innovate and to share ideas. If it's just a meeting that's about updating what's happened historically, then that meeting is not being well led. So just to recap, I hope this podcast has been useful to you. The things that we've covered in it is, well, what does successful leadership look like? What are the 5 key stages in the process of successfully leading a team? And finally, step number 3 is pausing for thought on how successful the team meetings are being led. My name is Amanda Carlisle, and I'd like to thank you for listening to this AAT podcast on leadership for accountants.